Odyssey fans. I'm Jesse, editor of Adventures in Odyssey Clubhouse Magazine.
And I'm Bob, producer of the Odyssey Adventure Club. Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Coming up later, we'll be interviewing Dan Hagen, the voice behind several characters on the show. But first, here's the latest news. The latest Imagination Station book, Surprise at Yorktown, is now available.
This is the final story in a trilogy on the Revolutionary War. First, there was The Redcoats Are Coming, which told how the war began.
And then Captured on the High Seas, where Patrick and Beth were prisoners below decks on a British ship.
Right, and now we have Surprise at Yorktown, where the war comes to an end. You know, Jess, I have a few questions about this book, so I think we need to talk with one of the authors.
Yeah, let's do a quick music sting so we can get Marianne in here.
What's a music sting?
Well, this.
It's always great to have Marianne Herring in the studio, and of course, she's the editor with Focus on the Family Book Publishing. We've got some exciting things going on in the world of the Imagination Station books. This is the last in a trilogy about the Revolutionary War. So tell us, Marianne, a little bit about this book. This is a period filled with great stories. Why'd you decide on the Battle of Yorktown?
Well, and all great stories must come to an end, and well, that was the end.
That was
okay,
it.
So
yeah.
That was the final surrender of the British to General George Washington.
Now, did you visit the place, or was more of the research done online and through books?
Well, I have a co-author, Nancy Sanders, who is an expert on the Revolutionary War, and she has visited many of these sites. I haven't visited that site. There is amazing online information. We got the maps, the letters, firsthand accounts. All of it is there and available for free on the internet.
So how much of that actually worked its way into the book?
Quite a bit, actually. There's some key elements in this book. Like, there's a really cool cave. General Cornwallis was... Okay, so Yorktown has this river. It's got all this water. So there was, you know, water leaches on things. So he was in this cavern with stalactites and stalagmites and green creepy stuff. And that was his headquarters. He was hidden out in a cave.
Wow.
And so we talk about the cave. And then in our book, we did condense the time a little bit. But ships were exploding. Cannonball, everywhere you went, they were just shooting cannonballs back and forth, volleying. So it was pretty torn apart. And we managed to not deal with much gore in the book, but it had been a battle going on a long time. In fact, it's called sometimes called the Siege at Yorktown.
Hmm.
They just waited each other out. And unfortunately, the British ran out of supplies. Well, unfortunately for them.
Yes, that's right.
Exactly. Fortunately for us. So we're going to have to say this. But anyway, their supplies couldn't get through.
Now, you've said in the past that sometimes the artwork for the book comes before the story and the story comes later. So what was the case here? Which came first?
For book 13, which is The Redcoats Are Coming, that story came together really easily. It's the story of Paul Revere's ride, and the cousins get to go with him. That was pretty much simultaneously. Book 14, we kind of knew, because it all takes place mostly under the deck, and we didn't want to have a cover that was under the deck. You know, they were in prison.
That's exciting. Right,
the prison ship. So we had to have the cover on there. But the siege at Yorktown was, we were rushed for the cover. And so we just did the final scene because it was really poignant and it matches a picture. But there's a picture of two men, a drummer and somebody playing a fife.
Mm-hmm.
They're all raggedy. That picture is what we wanted to evoke with the cover of book 15.
Well, you know, it's often difficult in historical fiction to make the characters really active because, I mean, you know, Patrick and Beth, they can't sign the Declaration of Independence because, you know, the real people did that, right? So how do you solve that problem in this book where you make them as active as possible without kind of violating that boundary?
Well, this one had a lot of boundaries, too, because we didn't want 8-year-olds running around getting hit by cannonballs or, slashing people with swords. So we had them tracking a spy, which was relatively safe enough. And then they scared away some soldiers by leading them into a skunk den where the skunks did the threatening and the soldiers ran away. It gets a little bit tricky, especially in the more violent books.
But it's true. You know, most grown men are afraid of skunks. And I would drop my weapons and run. You know, kids love animals, and you always get animals into the stories, like the skunks.
Do.
So what can you tell us about some of the other animals in this book?
Well, it's pretty much the skunks. All the rabbits and everything had gone away, but what's interesting is Paul McCusker and I had like an hour conversation about whether it would be easier to scare the skunk by jumping on top of the log or whether you needed some other kind of impetus to get the skunk out of the log. And so we compromised on Beth blowing her flute in a really high-pitched, scary noise, which also gave Beth something to do because you're always trying to make both of the cousins look smart. So,
did you go into any fields and field test this thing, the flutes versus jumping on a skunk log?
No, but if you'd like to do that for a Clubhouse article, sign me up.
Okay. I could just picture the sound design guys out there doing Foley with skunks in a log.
Exactly.
Well, we understand that the next Imagination Station book, number 16, is going to feature Wits End getting struck by lightning, and there's a volcano erupting, not in Wits End, but someplace else. Give us a preview of that one.
This is a book that I have wanted to do since the series started. It just never came about at the right time. It's set in Pompeii, AD 79, when the famous Mount Vesuvius explodes.
Yeah.
And as Jesse pointed out, I always like to have animals in this. And this is, for those of you who go online are familiar with the plaster casts of the non-survivors of the lava flow, there's a dog that was still chained up. The owners had not unleashed the dog to at least try and run away. And when I saw those pictures as a child, I was horrified. So this is a vanity project. I wanted to write a book so that that dog could get free. Okay. And so I'm sorry if that's a spoiler, but he's running free on the cover. It's not really, but that dog is going to get unchained.
Yes. I'm glad to hear the dog lived. You know, I don't like when movies or books have the dogs die.
That's, I remember when my kids were younger, they would get much more upset about violence against animals sometimes than against people.
Yeah, well, there's just a vulnerability about animals, and kids have a sense of justice. And so, and they're small, so they can protect the animals and the animals' rights, where you figure an adult can look after him or herself. So I kind of get that, but that dog should have at least been let loose.
Well, we're excited. You know, and the plan is that we're going to preview the book at the Odyssey Adventure Club and give members an opportunity to read it before it actually comes out on the store shelves.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. We want to make sure our OAC members are treated well. So you guys will get the first look at this book.
And as a little teaser in Clubhouse, in our November issue, we have another volcano story written by Marianne, where she sets this one is in Hawaii, and the readers get to actually finish the story. She leaves it at a cliffhanger, kids running up towards the overflowing volcano, and what's going to happen next? And the readers get to write the ending to that.
That's cool.
Yeah, we're kind of excited about that. So thank you, Marianne, for giving us that volcano story. You can pick up Surprise at Yorktown and the rest of the Imagination Station book series at your local Christian bookstore or online. Just visit theimaginationstation.com.
While you're there, check out all the extra goodies like fun activities, interviews, and devotionals.
And don't forget that every book has a puzzle in the back that gives you a secret word. You can use that secret word to unlock a free Adventures in Odyssey audio episode on the website.
Okay, now let's talk to Dan Hagen. He's the voice of a few characters on the show, but I don't want to give away which ones.
Why don't we all find out together by listening to the interview.
Sounds good. Dan, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hey, my pleasure.
Hey, listen, you've been acting in movies and TV shows for about 25 years. When did you first know that that's what you wanted to do? You wanted to be an actor.
I come from a big family. I have six brothers and sisters, so I guess I was always looking for attention from my parents. The acting thing, I was like writing plays in school and putting them on. My first real, I think, when I heard the sound of the audience and the laughter and applause was like in seventh grade, we would send out oral interpretation, and you would pay like $1 to get a comic monologue, and they would send it to you, and you'd do it in front of the entire school. And I remember mine was called Mom's Bridge Game. I made fun of the parents for being more interested in their hairstyles and what the other gossipy ladies were doing. And so I guess about eighth or ninth grade I was thinking that it might be fun to go out and make people laugh.
Well, cool. Now, Hollywood is probably the first place that people think of as far as places where you go to act. But there are other places as well, other cities. What made you decide to go to Hollywood instead of somewhere else?
First, I went and studied acting in college. And then I went and looked for acting jobs in theaters all over the country. And I moved to New York because I was told you either had to go to New York or Hollywood.
Okay.
And I didn't think I was pretty enough to go to Hollywood. So I went to New York and did a bunch of plays, and I made it onto Broadway. And then I met my wife doing a play. I played her dog. She played the master.
Okay.
I like to say that's the way it stayed.
Yeah, has that pretty much defined your relationship ever since?
Yeah. Uh-huh. We got in a play that took us out to Hollywood, and that was our last stop. And so we were doing a play there, and we found out we were going to have a baby, and we had to decide between New York and Hollywood. And I liked Hollywood because it had swimming pools, the weather was nicer, and it wasn't as crowded. So we've been out here since my daughter was born 18 years ago.
Wow. Well, in addition to TV and movie work, you've done a lot of video games, including some familiar titles, Star Wars and the Ratchet and Clank series. How is acting in video games different from acting in a movie or TV show, or for that matter, even a radio show?
Well, video games are a singular activity. You're usually in there all by yourself, and you have to pretend to be talking to somebody else. And when I did Odyssey, everybody is in the room, and you get to look at and talk to the people who you're actually acting with. And radio shows were always a love of mine because there was something called CBS Mystery Theater, and I would go in my room, and I'd turn off the lights, and I'd play like an old-time radio mystery show, and my imagination just made it much more interesting than stuff I was seeing on TV, and I really loved it. And I got to do radio shows in New York, too, because New York used to be the haven for live radio shows, and they would have sound effects guy would be one of the actors, and he would be doing the sound effects live. Now, they can reproduce any sound in the studio, but back in those days, you had to make birds fly by flapping a glove or soldiers march by having a bunch of blocks all fall down at the same time. So I like doing that because it was live, and you got the audience. And video games, I like doing that too, but it's usually imagining stuff all by yourself, and there's a lot of grunting and groaning. So video games, there seems to be a lot of fights, and I would have to go, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, and sometimes screaming and yelling when you die. So screaming off, they would say a four-second dying, or do a shorter death scream, or do a longer death scream. Okay, now you've been shot in the back and punched, then die. So it's, they can be very specific, but also rewarding. And the way you keep your voice from going out is just like saving all that stuff for the end.
As you mentioned, there are a lot of different scenarios that can happen within a video game. So do you have to record a different version for everything that might go on?
On some games, they have these things called cut scenes. Mm-hmm. And that's usually when the video game stops and then you watch a little movie about what's going on. And those stay pretty much the same.
Okay.
But I'm in a video game called Skylanders. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yeah, sure.
You have little toys that you put on the portal. And I play Master Eon. And some of that can be repetitive. Like I'll say, only a portal master of the earth element may open this door. And I have to go back and say, only a portal master of the fire element can open this door. Then I have to go back and say, only a portal master of the whatever element else. So I have to go through all the elements. So sometimes it's like doing seven or eight lines and just trying to stay interested as one word changes in the line. But that's why they pay us the big bucks, I suppose.
Now, are you a gamer yourself? Do you play any of these games?
I have a 14-year-old son, and I would mostly get the games that I was in because they would give me a free copy.
Okay.
But then he started picking requests about games that he would like, and he's so much better than I am and so far advanced that I sort of stopped playing video games that I'm not in. But I do remember playing Star Wars games when they first came out, and I would start at like 7 o'clock at night, and it'd be 3 in the morning, and I'd go, oh, where did the time go?
That can happen.
It can be very involved and hard to quit.
Well, for Adventures in Odyssey, we first met you at an open casting call in 2008. You know, we had a number of actors in and basically told them, show us what you can do. Have you been involved in an audition like that before? Something where they just said, go for it?
No, it's very rare that they ask you to do more than one thing. I think an MTV comedy show asked me to throw a bunch of characters up, and I did. And then I remember leaving, and they wouldn't pay for my parking.
That's not a good sign, is it?
Here I am. I'm coming to your place and park in your basement. And they said, no, I'm sorry. You'll have to pay for your own parking. So I guess that meant I didn't get the job.
Is it easier to do an audition like you just described because you can do anything you want? Or is it harder because you're not given a specific character to wrap your mind around?
I think it's probably harder unless, like a lot of stand-up comedians, they have a set that they usually can do.
Uh-huh.
But for a serious character work, you really are trying to please people to show them you can do what they want. For me, I like to know exactly what you're looking for. It's like going to a restaurant and the person says, just bring me anything you have back there. And you do, and they go, well, I don't really eat fish. So it's like, oh, but here, I just brought you this lovely fish dinner. So if you're ordering it at the restaurant of Dan, then it's nice to know what you want to eat.
Well, after your audition, we knew that we had someone special on our hands, and we had to find a part for you. And I know you tried several different characters and then found the perfect fit as Archie Hagler, who was the bad guy who ran Uncle Archie's carnival in the Green Ring Conspiracy.
That was a fun story to do.
And
a nice long one, too.
Exactly. And as we recorded that series, some of the actors didn't know if their characters would be good or bad. So did you have an inkling?
Well, I remember, I think it was Paul. I had to audition at home because when I auditioned for you guys originally, that wasn't one of the characters I did. And then I auditioned again, and I think you guys were looking for like a Sidney Greenstreet. And for your listeners who don't know Sidney Greenstreet, he was an old-time actor from the 30s and 40s, a big, heavy Englishman who did Humphrey Bogart movies. I think Maltese Falcon he was in. And
Casablanca.
Yes, Casablanca, very good. He has very specific sort of delivery, so I tried doing it like that. And then Paul called me up at home and said, here, try being even more like Sidney Greenstreet. And then auditioned on the phone, and the next thing I know, I got the part. So I was like, well, I guess Sidney was the way to go. He's been my inspiration for Archie.
Well, odds are a lot of our younger listeners aren't going to know who Sidney Greenstreet is unless we give them a taste of what he sounds like. So why don't we play a clip from Archie Hagler?
Well, well, well. Detective Tom Polehouse. What a pleasure it is to see you again.
How are you, Archie?
Delightful and delighted. And you are John Avery Whittaker.
Well, it's good to meet you.
The pleasure is all mine, sir.
Well, let's now when our young fans go back and watch some of those Humphrey Bogart movies, they'll know exactly who we're talking about. So how did you make him comical, but still serious?
Well, Sidney Greenstreet has an interesting way of sort of laughing at everything he says. He's always sort of chuckling, which makes him seem a little more evil. An evil character does think of themselves as evil. So I think I was just trying to play him being entertained by everybody who surrounded him. And when the circumstances get heavy, then he loses his laugh. And maybe he becomes a little more serious when he finds himself in serious situation.
Now, the Green Ring Conspiracy ended and Archie went to prison. But we wanted to keep working with you. So shortly after that, we needed somebody to play Jacques Henri. And your name was the first one on the list, and Jacques has a French accent, and there are many ways to play the French accent. So how do you decide how much is too much, or do you just go for it and then let the director pull you back?
I think when I got the script, I said, well, because my French accent was based on Pepe Le Pew.
Perfect, exactly.
The old Warner Brothers cartoons, and I said, well, I think I need something more. So I went online and looked for different Frenchmen that I could listen to, and I picked Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who's a film director. So anyway, I listened to him giving interviews, and he was very specific the way he talked, and I thought I would just try to hear him in my head for Jacques Henri. And then when I got to record, I would listen to the director say, do more, do less. And so I just tried to keep a real person in mind and try to forget that you're even doing an accent.
Well, there are a couple other parts you've played for us that we really want to ask you about. In the Bible Network, you play Drill Sergeant Combs at Bible Boot Camp, which is a great character. Was this character based on the actor R. Lee Ermey, who has been really made a career almost out of playing drill sergeants, including the one in Toy Story?
Yes, he was an inspiration. And I think as far as drill sergeants go, he's the first one people think of. And for me, I just spoke with a Southern accent and shouted everything. And that was my inspiration.
Drop and give me 20. So pretty much every line was a yelling tone. How do you do that and not hurt your voice?
Just talk from the diaphragm, son.
Yes, sir.
Not to do it all in your throat and do it from your stomach and use that muscle, because that muscle doesn't get as sore as quickly as the one in your throat does.
Okay.
But even after that, I think I was a bit raspy sounding when I got done with that drill sergeant.
Well, we could tell you're having a good time. It's a lot of fun to listen to as well.
Yeah, and some good advice to use the diaphragm. I like that. You also played Rudolph Karazinski, who was one of the bad guys in Home Again. And there were two brothers in those scenes, and the other one was played by actor Nick Guest. And after a few takes, you guys ended up switching roles. How did that come about, and is that common when you're recording, just to switch roles like that?
It's not very common, because usually when you're hired, they say, okay, you're doing this, and you go home and study, and you come back. But at Odyssey, things are a little more loose, and we tried it one way, and I think our director said, well, this sounds better this way. And I thought, sure, I can try something else, and I just wanted to make the best recording possible. But it is unusual to switch like that.
Well, finally, this summer, we were in Burbank together, Dan, to record an Odyssey Adventure Club version of Pinocchio, a two-parter. It's coming up next year. What can you tell us about that show and your role in it?
Well, I play a character who is being played by Jacques Henri. So I am Jacques Henri playing a man who is selling wood. And I got to play with Marvin Kaplan, an old-time movie actor and radio actor. And he was a voice in a popular cartoon when I was a kid called Top Cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was in a very famous movie called It's a Mad, 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 I don't know how many mads there are, Mad World.
It's pretty mad, yeah.
It had every comedian in it from the 60s. He played a gas station owner that got beat up by Jonathan Winters. It's a very funny movie. I think kids can go find that on Netflix or their video store. Do they have video stores anymore? It's a very funny movie to see, and Marvin's in there, and he's also very funny. But I get to play the character as Jacques Henri, who sells him the block of wood he carves Pinocchio out of. And I don't know the rest of the story, because I only got the first 10 pages. So I'm going to have to wait when it airs to see how it turns out.
Obviously, we're all looking forward to hearing Pinocchio. Are there any other stories from the studio, and of course, everybody knows you as Jacques Henri, that you could share with us before you go?
During a recording for Jacques Henri, we were looking for something for Jacques to say when he was upset, and we were trying to find what would be most appropriate for the family network, and like rats or something, but it didn't really translate. So I called my friend, who married a Frenchman, and asked him what kind of oath would her husband say, and she came up with la vache, which means the cow. And I was so happy to see la vache made it into the next script, because she had helped me find those words, and they ended up in the next script on the printed page. So I just wanted her to give her credit for coming up with that for Jacques Henri.
That's great. But I tell you what, we did include on our Facebook page, in fact, folks can track it down, a picture of you chatting with Marvin Kaplan during one of these little downtime that you had. But it was a pleasure getting a chance to meet you, and hopefully we'll get a chance to see each other again at a future recording session. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us on the podcast.
All right, Jesse, Bob, thanks so much.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Dan just has a voice that's fun to listen to, whether it's in an interview or as a character in Adventures in Odyssey.
Oh, I agree. What's your favorite character that he's done?
Oh, I love the drill sergeant. You know, I have two little brothers who are in the military, so when I hear Dan do that voice, I just think of them.
Well, his voice is definitely the most memorable part of that episode for me. We'll have links to both of those episodes on our website, and of course, you can hear them in the Odyssey Adventure Club.
Before we go, we'd better give a preview of this weekend's episode of The Ties That Bind. Last weekend left everyone on a big cliffhanger with Wit collapsing after his meeting.
Yeah, we're going to hear a little more about that in the latest adventure, but I don't think it's a spoiler to say that there's a whole lot more going on.
Oh, like every episode of this series, there are all sorts of storyline and plot twists to follow. Let's hear a preview of what's coming up.
On the next adventure in Odyssey, Emily, Matthew, and Jay finally make their way to Hangman's Hollow.
Jay, come back!
No way! I want to see...
A ghost town!
And Vance gets after Connie's half-sister about their business arrangement.
You're not bailing on me, are you? Because it's too late. The money's in the bank.
Things are heating up around town on the next Adventure in Odyssey.
You can hear The Ties That Bind Part 9 this weekend on the radio or online. Or you can get the full 14-episode album on CD in your local Christian bookstore or on digital download on our store or on iTunes.
Or you can join the Odyssey Adventure Club and hear it all right now. Links to all of those ways to listen are available online at witsend.org/podcast.
And that's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation of Focus on the Family.
Our website again is witsend.org/podcast, or you can call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day's an adventure.